All right, it's day 75 of this World Cup.
Exactly. We are counting. We're counting accurately, I think. Right,
I'm pretty sure. Remember the guy who was like, my day starts at 6 a.m. and it ends at 9 a.m. And then from 9 a.m. to noon, that's day two. And it's compounded. You don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Shout out to all the morning routine guys, bro. Thank you for being toxic and ruining your family's
lives. I thought
you were
talking about the dude that like wakes up at 4 in the morning and splashes water on his face and then runs outside.
Oh, that guy? No. Okay. That guy only lives one day. All right, whatever. What's up with the Cooligans?
Welcome to the Cooligans Daily Live. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We are still here in San Francisco after a fantastic USMNT win, filled with a little bit of controversy.
That's right.
So down in Santa Clara. But the vibes are good. I mean, we saw people out in San Francisco celebrating, excited. Not really even like worried that much about Belgium. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but man.
Bro, we've eaten the frites, bro. We've eaten the Liege waffles. We ain't impressed.
We know everything about you. We've done all the research.
Don't make us call them freedom waffles, dude. You think we won't?
We're going to be like the news lady. Be like, I don't even know where Belgium is on the map.
I know exactly where it is. And beer cafes.
No, man.
Done. Y'all speak Flemish, bro? Spit it out is what I'm saying.
Okay, so no, man, this is an exciting time for the U.S. men's national team. Obviously, their next game coming up on Monday, and a lot to look forward to. And
Christian and I have spent so much time together that we need to bring some other people in here.
Exactly. We last night Taylor Twellman joined us, and and now we got another guy that screams into a microphone when necessary. Our dear friend,
World Cup commentator.
That's right. You've heard him. You've heard his voice several times on the Fox broadcast throughout these matches. The one and only Brian Dunseth.
Wow. Big Dunny.
What's good? How you been, brother?
Oh, my guys. It's been a while. I appreciate the time. I'm sorry that you had to scrape the barrel and give me a call, but it's always good to be with you guys.
Right. Unfortunately, those 700 other people said no, but we got to you. And I think that's the most important.
Oh, he's still here. I thought I deleted him from my phone.
No, we love talking to you. Why don't we just start with your immediate reaction to that U.S. game? What was the lasting thought you had as you walked away from that?
Yeah, listen, I've been based in Monterrey, Mexico, and being a part of these broadcasts going out around the world. And I've got this British group with me. And the one thing, they're always kind of looking at me, and, you know, it's the whole thing, like, Americans, do you even play? But the one thing they've been all impressed with, the level of urgency. And this is what I've been really talking about. We saw it in glimpses of both against Senegal and against Germany in the build-up to the start of the World Cup. But against Paraguay, I think there was, like, a watermarker set in terms of accountability, performance, and expectation. And I think it's not lost on any of these guys that they understand. It's moments like Tony Meola and Alexi and Marcelo and Hartsey and Tab Ramos and Waldo, what they did in etching their name in stone of kind of the folklore of U.S. history. And these guys, you know, they were wet behind the ears in 2022. And now what we're seeing right now is really mature performances where they recognize individually and collectively there's a responsibility. The challenge right now is looking forward as opposed to maybe looking back. We're all really frustrated, I would assume, with the call and the decision to show straight red to Flo Balogun. Considering it, you know, the level of accountability and VAR and infusion into this World Cup, it's been really, really high. I know everyone's talking about Lionel Messi against Algeria, where he gets away with a rake down the calf and Achilles, and it's nothing more than a foul. So, you know, as we try to parse through whatever this looks like from Colina and FIFA and everything else, you know, the reality is now they've got to change tack, change focus, and just shown this level, I think, of heart, grit, and desire, and kind of the old Americana flag when they dug in to get that second goal against Bosnia and Herzegovina.
All right. I mean, when you think of it from a, especially as a guy who played on the U.S. men's national team, what is the
captain of the Olympic team? Is that right?
Okay, we can go through the whole resume. But
employee of the month at a Cold Stone once.
My Venmo's going up every single day. Damn it, man.
But as somebody used to play, and I was asking Taylor this as well, but just the when you look at how this team is playing, I mean, the fearlessness and really the consecutive games where we're clearly the better team, where we are the favorites, we are possessing the ball, where teams are playing a low block, it's like sort of odd to see that. As a former player, is what do you, what can you attest to that as to why the sort of psychological shift from the U.S. and from the other teams? And then is there also a part of you that's like, man, I wish I would have, I could play on this team right now. Like when you look at it now?
I'm so insanely jealous and insecure with the way that I watch this. I'm so envious, man. Like, can you imagine playing next to Chris Richards? As a former center back who never got the opportunity to take in a World Cup, I was always looking at like Eddie Popes and Carlos Chamosas and Greg Berhalters, Big Cat Tony Sana, Bocanegra, Gochi Onyewu, and the work that they did in that center back position. But, you know, having been a part of the broadcast for TNT and Turner and covering kind of the highs and lows since Qatar, and the dismissal of Greg Berhalter and the disappointment of Copa America, turning into Mauricio Pochettino and being there from day one and seeing in Austin and the preparation for that game against Panama, there was a sense of urgency. And oftentimes, right, we've weaponized this conversation with this group around vibes, right? This brotherhood collectively that's been together for the better part of their teenage years into their young adult life. But when you're around this group, you know that, like, once they step onto the field, there's this level of accountability from Mauricio Pochettino and his coaching staff that, man, you better show up, you better work, and it doesn't matter what you're doing with your domestic football. There's not like one size fits all. He's holding everybody accountable within kind of their own individual silos. So I'm not surprised that they've been able to turn it on, figure out ways to kind of even dial in a little bit more. But it feels like, and listen, I'm not trying to be Mike Grella and have the whole of Australia angry at me. But, you know, when I was watching that US-Australia game, I was thinking to myself, we used to play like Australia. And now we're playing like the United States, man. We're taking it to them. And we got style and substance and creativity, variation of attacking plays and patterns. We're great on set pieces defensively. You know, all this talk and the hatred about Tim Ream's age, like, he's been phenomenal alongside Chris Richards. And people forget Alex Freeman is like 18 months into his professional career, and all of a sudden he's being looked at as maybe one of the future superstars in his position. Serginho Dest is flying, Jedi Robbins. I mean, I struggle to name one person that we've seen in the starting 11 that's quote unquote kind of played poorly. So it's a good time to be a U.S. men's national team fan. And I think with our kind of Americana history with like Olympics in the winter and the summer, where we don't even know what sport it is, but we're like, hey, gold medal. Like, now you're starting to see that momentum. Now you're kind of seeing like the Super Bowl and you know, the NBA and all of that stuff kind of mashed together, sent on a rocket ship to the moon. And I think that's kind of the role that we're feeling as the fans of this group of players.
Yeah, and I think you said it best, where now the team is playing on the front foot, and it's I don't remember a World Cup where we've done that before. In fact, Mauricio Pochettino is already now the winningest U.S. men's national team coach of all time, because if you look back, it was a lot of draws that got us into those knockout rounds, and now we're winning. But how far can they go, and can they play this way against Belgium?
Yeah, I think they can. Listen, I know people look back to the March friendlies. I was there in Atlanta against both Belgium and Portugal. The one thing you have to take into context isn't the final score. You have to look at the first 45 minutes, because after in the second half, it was basically a free-for-all. It was a frenzy of substitutions where the tactics are out the window, additional plays different, and everyone is kind of, you know, getting chances. That first 45 minutes, U.S. gave up a goal in the dying seconds of that first half. They were up 1-0 right into the very end. They go into 1-1 at halftime. And you could see kind of what they were trying to do against an elite opponent. Now, listen, De Bruyne, he can pull the strings in ways not many have been able to do in his positional play. Doku is arguably one of the most elite wingers in the game right now. Lukaku's intelligence and goal-scoring ability was on full display the other day. You throw Tielemans and Trossard's, you know, antagonistic presence in that midfield, and all of a sudden, you got a lot of weapons that you got to worry about. But 1A, similar to what we talk about with Christian Pulisic, if you are going to an attack in a team defensively, we got to minimize one player. And that one player certainly is the number 7, Kevin De Bruyne, one of the best in this generation to play in the position.
And when, as far as Balogun, obviously missing the next game against Belgium, yep, who replaces him? I'm hearing, you know, there's a lot of opinions, whether it should be Ricardo Pepi,
opinions.
Haji Wright. But what do you feel is the best option?
See, here's the craziest part. Every time I try to put myself, and I think I get closer to the brain of Mauricio Pochettino, Jesus Perez, Miggy, all of their coaching staff, I realize how far away I really am. because against that Portugal team in March, he played Christian as a hybrid of a number nine, as the highest player, and he left all the other guys on the bench. This is where I think we'll miss a guy like Patrick Adjiman even more. I think Patrick Adjiman, with the way that his kind of movement is different than the way the other guys play and his ability to get in behind, I think you're going to this is the game where you kind of really miss him going down with that Achilles injury before the roster was released. Ricardo Pepi can score goals. He's done it for PSV, both in league play and obviously Champions League, but he's a different type of player. Haji Wright, we haven't really seen much of him, but remember, he's still a guy that scored in the Gold Cup, has scored in Nations League, and has been there when they've needed him. The only thing I'm going to think about is structurally, how does Mauricio Pochettino want to set his team up? And if we do, again, see Christian Pulisic in that hybrid of a number nine position, he's got a bunch of different variations, a bunch of different options, but we sure as hell didn't think he was going to start flowing Ricardo against Australia the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to Paulo Fonseca when he managed Christian Pulisic, and I said, is he a nine? Well, you know, where is he? And he kind of smiled, and he said he's a 9.5, and I think we may be seeing that again. But I also love the way he plays alongside Pepe. So, Haji Red, I love you, my G, but, you know, 70th minute on is when you start warming up. let Pepe start. And let's talk a little bit about England, because I was really impressed. You know, DR Congo, everyone expected to sit in a low block and wait, and they went after England. England needed to completely adjust their shape. But the most important thing that happened was Harry Kane decided to beat Harry Kane. Mm-hmm. And two absolute incredible goals. England, you know, beating DR Congo in a game that was a little bit touchier than I think a lot of England fans expected. How far can this team go?
I would have said probably a lot further than Mexico City, because they're going to be breathing through holes they didn't know they had. Because that Azteca,
what a great line.
I mean, you're talking about altitude, you're talking about atmosphere, you're talking about smog, and you're talking about that heat. I was in Mexico. Man, it is burning hot right now. And the hostile environment that you're going to see in Azteca is everything that England has experienced on domestic. Listen, I'm not trying to be naive. They played in some of the most dynamic environments that we've seen in Europe and all over the world, and they played in World Cups. But this is going to be different, because I don't really know how to articulate in the right way what it's like being around Azteca, much less being on the field in Azteca. Harry Kane, listen, I was having this conversation the other day. I think that the way this tournament has gone for Harry Kane, the way this season has gone for Bayern Munich, it reminds me a lot of just thinking about Luka Modric's run at the World Cup in Russia in 2018 and the success that he had with Real Madrid and the success that he had with Croatia put him in that Ballon d'Or category, and that elite Ballon d'Or category really put that Ballon d'Or into his hands. He's outrageous. You know, you listen to all of the experts that have played at such an incredibly high level with the way that the body motion, the trajectory, the way that he strikes the ball. He's a pure hunter and a finisher. The way that he creates not only for himself but for his teammates, and the way that he works defensively off the ball, because you don't really see it all the time on television, but when you're in stadium, you realize his appetite for destruction is as important as his appetite for goals. So he's outstanding, and he's got a supporting cast that can feed him kind of different variations in the attacking phase of play.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what the experience is going to be like. England, even the England fans in Mexico City as well.
Oh, there's a lot of red skin in white shirts, bro.
We did it real quick. Because you spent so much time in Mexico, we'll get to. We're looking at the Opta stats. It said 13 top goal scorers in the World Cup since 2018: Kylian Mbappe, Lionel Messi, and Harry Kane. I mean, there's something to, you know, we've been talking about the issues with Portugal. This I'm going off on a tangent, but like that Cristiano Ronaldo is not really a nine, right? He's not moving. And when you see Harry Kane, especially when he got the first goal, the header, he's calling for the ball, he's positioning himself, and he's making just the correct movements, and it's like you can see why Portugal is struggling up front with a player like Ronaldo, because he's seemingly, when you see the best strikers in the world do it, you're like, I don't think this guy is like legitimately a striker. So yeah. Harry Kane, best striker in the world. Yeah, of course Bayern is going to support their guy. We're looking at more tweets here. Meanwhile,
Kane at Rewarf.
Daniel, I did want to ask, because you are in Mexico, the just kind of the scenes from the Mexican fans. Mexico has had inarguably the best World Cup they've ever had. This has been incredible to see.
They've not given up a goal yet. It's crazy.
I mean, really turning. We had Chicharito on a couple weeks ago talking about how the frustration that fans have with the team, but it really does feel like things are turning on with these performances. What has it like for you on the ground?
Yeah, listen, I was based in Monterrey for the first four games. And the moment that you step out, by the way, beautiful city, so incredible. The people are so incredible. The moment that you step outside, it doesn't matter if it's game day. It doesn't matter if Mexico's playing. The Mexican jerseys are all over. The brand new crispy black jerseys, the iconic green jerseys. And there was just a feeling. And it's really crazy, right? Because in the fall, there were so much questions about Vasco Aguirre, about Rafa Márquez, and what the future was going to hold, and why couldn't these players show up? From September, October, November friendlies, they were not comfortable. Nobody was comfortable. But then all of a sudden, March against Portugal and Belgium, you started to see, okay, maybe they got a little bit more belief. And now when you look at that group and the infusion of Brian Gutierrez and Gilberto Mora and everybody involved, and now Raul's flying, they just have this... I don't know how to explain it. Like, you rub your fingers together. There's a spirit amongst the group where it's us versus everybody. And again, that environment anywhere in Mexico is incredible. Azteca has been incredible. Guadalajara has been incredible. And Monterrey, that stadium is so unbelievably beautiful with the backdrop of the mountains behind it. I got to do Sweden, Tunisia, Japan, Tunisia. I got to do Korea Republic against South Africa, then ended up doing Netherlands, Morocco. And it was funny because you would still have the traveling support, but you all just see green jerseys inside the stadiums because the fans just wanted to see World Cup football for the first time since 1986. But it was great because they almost needed to be convinced of which team to root for, because all of a sudden you'd start seeing like a little bit of dominance, and then it was like, ole, ole. And all of a sudden, like, it started coming out. And then they went to the iconic song that was like, you know, now you're our brother, now you're Mexican. It was incredible to see the atmosphere, and I'm really, really happy I had the start of the group stages in the round of 32 down there to just kind of get that feel for what the culture and the expectations were like.
I love it. And look, I mean, that stadium in Monterrey is beautiful. It's got nothing on MetLife with that beautiful Carlstadt, New Jersey behind it. let's talk a little bit about the opponent that the U.S. are going to face in Seattle, another beautiful city with a beautiful mountain in the background. Let's talk a little bit about Belgium. You know, big comeback win for them. But still, I'm really unsure as exactly how to feel about Belgium. In particular, Lukaku seems to be a bit of a super sub. How are you? Do you think they're growing into this tournament? Should we be worried? Talk to me a little bit about Belgium.
Listen, I think the margins are so incredibly thin with what we're seeing. And listen, I always start with the idea of intelligence, because these players, they don't get to this level unless they are incredibly intelligent. We can talk about player profiles. We can talk about technical ability. We can talk about quickness and verticality or size and strength. All of those markers are really, really simple to talk about. It's really just about margins, man. All of these margins, proactive versus reactive. I mean, you go back to that Brazil-Japan game the other night, and the idea of keeping possession late in the game, it ends up in a turnover and the ball's in the back of the net versus like height, width, and distance. Get that ball as far away from your goal as possible and look to, you know, you might not win the game, but certainly don't lose the game. So what Belgium basically showed us is that it doesn't matter what the score line is. Until that final whistle blows, they are going to figure it ways out to throw everything at you. They've got a foundation defensively that's really, really strong. They've got balance in the midfield. They've got kind of an antagonistic kind of bite and presence where they're not afraid to get stuck in and not afraid to see if they can manipulate the player or manipulate the referee. And then in the attacking phase of play, I mean, how do you double down 1v1 or 2v1 with Doku when he's isolated on that left-hand side? How do you deal with second runs from Trossard popping out of the midfield? When De Bruyne is dropping into the box, how do you minimize him and step into that midfield and try to force him backwards when you know he can just spin and hit a cutting ball? So, again, for me, it's just margins. You know, everyone kind of dressed broad stroke it, but at the end of the day, you're talking about moments where these elite players are capable of doing something special. So you really have to try to slow down big picture while details touch tight in the box and trying to just force them back to where they came from.
I had seen the odds from like the odds makers and stuff, and it's apparently, I think it's like -115 for the US and like -120 for Belgium.
That's pretty even.
Which is pretty even. It's kind of crazy.
I've never seen a lose-lose. That's kind of crazy.
So it's kind of wild how what expectations people are putting on Belgium, especially compared to the U.S. Yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, heartbreak for Senegal. I almost still can't believe that we are playing against Belgium. They were up 2-0. Maybe the second goal for Belgium is a little iffy. The penalty for sure is like, I don't know, man. I mean, just VAR. Is there any, maybe we could wrap up here. Just like VAR, what you doing, bro? Like, why they're getting involved?
I still like it. It's just the way it's being used. That's my theory.
Are so marginal. It just feels like these are the moments where VAR shouldn't be getting involved.
Yeah, listen, I know that we talk about the different lines, right? What you see in Major League Soccer is sometimes different than the Premier League, which is certainly different than what we see in Champions League. What I would say is that the idea of intent, I would love to see it more tilted towards the word instinct. Because instinctually, in moments like that with Flo Balogun, there's never a moment where he's trying to put his foot down in that angle to take out the defenders, you know, roll at a moment. And in those super slow-mos, listen, it looks horrible. There's no doubt about it. But in real time, right. The context and the instinct is completely different. Now, and again, I'm coming from a defender standpoint. And so if he breaks, it's kind of like what happened with Kone. Was it really worth a 5-game suspension, or was just that a moment where he's come through and caught him? Listen, the debate's going to rage on. It's going to continue. But wherever we fall in line with this going forward, we're constantly just looking for a level of understanding for all of us that we can kind of hear the process that leads to the decision. And maybe that's turning our attention a little bit more to rugby and TMO and how they figured out to have more of a public conversation with the referees in moments like this, because I think that's probably a big part of what the future is going to look like in soccer.
And it must be nice to be on a broadcast and be like, hey, let's get Dr. Joe Macnick in or Mark Plattenberg. I mean, I wish we had an option that on the podcast.
Really? Yeah, we could do like, yo, here's my cousin Pedro. We got some comments and obviously some tweets here. This was not the definition of a red card.
Merriam-Webster getting involved.
Dude, when you got library, when you got what the dictionaries mad at you, bro?
Damn, you see, because it was Bosnia and Herzegovina, so yeah, Merriam and Webster had to get involved. Okay. Be like, yo, I brought my homie.
We doubled up.
What else we got?
What else we got here?
Any other thing? Okay, no team has scored more set piece goals this World Cup than the USMNT.
Are we the Arsenal? Which is a meme of are we the baddies? Great Mitchell and Webb look show. But hey, man, we're scoring, baby.
Hey, who cares?
LFG. Okay. Oh,
wow, producer even getting involved.
You know, we can't say the F word, but JTV says no.
No to what? What?
VAR?
No to Dunny on the show? Uh-oh. What are you saying?
No, they couldn't beat Belgium with Balogun.
Okay. What else do we got?
I mean, that you have a lot of trust in Belgium there. Okay. We out of here with that energy. USA all the way, baby.
That's it. Positivity.
Thank you, bro. Shouts to all the Delulu Americans, bro.
USA to the moon. Like,
that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, this is the energy we need.
Like it's Bitcoin, bro.
Hell yeah, Doug. But like back in the day. Justice for Ferrer and free my boy Balogun.
That's right. For that's real. What we need. Okay.
For real.
I mean, we're seeing a bunch of, I think the cool thing is we're seeing a bunch of memes and stuff of people, very new soccer fans, casual soccer fans. That I saw one tweet that was like, this is first time watching soccer this World Cup, and then now it's like, that was definitely not a red card. How could they call that? Like, people are getting locked into this sport, so you love to see it. And Brian Dunseth is a big reason why.
Huge reason.
Thank you for being the voice of several matches of this World Cup, and thank you for joining us on the show, Dunny. It's always an absolute pleasure, and you're welcome back anytime, brother.
I appreciate it, guys. Good to see you again, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, cheers, Dunny. All right, we're gonna take a quick break.
Yep.
We have two awesome guests coming up in the next segment. We're talking to Roc Nation, two representatives from Roc Nation. One
Michael Yormark and Fred Pena.
Yeah, one of them is Vinicius Jr.'s agent. So we'll be back with more right after this.
Hey, welcome back to the Cooligans. Now, look, we are important people, okay? Right. You may not realize it, but the rest of the world is starting to take notice. And it's not, you know, we used to have conversations with just regular people. That's all over with. What you're about to see is an interview with two very important people and also two people from Rock Nation, okay? Okay. We got an absolutely incredible interview. We're very honored that they came on the show. We've got two heads from Rock Nation. We got Michael Yormark and Fred Pena. Check out our interview with these guys. It's absolutely incredible.
From a Rock Nation perspective, obviously the Jay-Z attached to it, the name, the celebrity with it. But is there a conversation you need to have with players to like instill that trust? And it's not simply just like, hey, we have a very famous and influential person that is attached to this company. Like, can I trust you with my career? Can I trust my career with like a rapper per se? You know what I mean?
Well, listen, Jay's not just a rapper.
I know. Okay.
He's a multi-billionaire. The majority of his wealth did not come from music, right? He's an entrepreneur. He's a businessman and one of the best of all time. That being said, I think it always goes back to the value proposition. It's not about, you know, who the owner is. It's what can you do to advance the career of an athlete?
Right.
And how can you make sure that athlete maximizes their career while they're playing?
Right.
That's our secret sauce, mm-hmm. right? And so we've done that in America, and we started to do that in Europe, and that's where we saw the opportunity. Because when I came to Europe in 2019, there were not a lot of full-service agencies. Most agencies were very transactional. They really didn't care about the athlete. They didn't want to service the athlete. They didn't want to leverage the athlete's IP. They didn't want to build the athlete's brand. And they didn't want to create opportunities that the athlete could benefit from, not only during their career, but post-career. That is what we've brought to the world of football. And we've done a pretty good job over the last, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah, you guys have signed some huge names. I mean, you work in South America as well. I mean, you know, if Jay Balvin calls me, I think I'm going to sign with your agency. You know what I mean? It's not a bad gig, you know? I'm like, oh my God, I was just listening. But you're in Brazil. And, you know, the world of sport in Latin America, I think it's hard to duplicate exactly that feeling. And when you get to the point of like, you're about to become pro, you're going to play for whatever it is, Flamengo, Corinthians, you know, Palmeiras. You could tell I grew up around people from Rio based on my accent. But when you get to that point, this is such a massive, momentous moment. You mentioned full service. What does that mean to that player? Can they understand that? Or are they only thinking about like Copa Libertadores and winning that?
I think they understand and they want it. And that's what makes us, you know, such an appealing agency for them, because they want to know that they can focus in the Copa Libertadores and know that the rest of their life and their families are taken care of. Because in the end, that's what we bring to a lot of these players, because they grew up their entire life. Their dream was to become a professional player, to be successful, to earn enough money to get their families out of where they're coming from.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, for them to have someone like us not only take care of the day-to-day needs that they have, but worry as well in building their brand and, you know, promoting them and making sure we're going to build that bridge for them to move overseas. It's, you know, it's music to their ears.
You guys work on individual player brands?
Yes.
Okay. Most of the logos I've ever seen for players suck. They're horrific.
Yeah, Alexis has a lot of opinions
on this.
They're
so bad. They look like, the cartoons where like one group of robots fights another one. They all look like that. It's the ones that they wear on their chest. It's so bad. We'll work on this. We'll talk about it. I set up a pitch deck, but you don't need to do it on the show.
I mean, one of the players you guys represent is Vinicius Jr. And scored a fantastic goal.
His logo's nice.
Oh, his logo is nice.
I said most. His logo is very nice.
I love it. Actually, I love the full service that you guys provide for me.
Alexis happens to be available to be represented.
By the way, we could do that for you too.
Oh, yeah, but okay.
We could.
Okay, well, let's get a GLP-1 on the phone. See if they want to sponsor me. Huh?
Yeah, okay, we have a pitch deck. All right.
Well, let's go back to Vinny. You were talking about Vinny.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, if Neymar never existed, Vinicius Jr. is the biggest player, the biggest active Brazilian player. I mean, when it
What's the experience managing? I mean, from it's great to hear the story of the player who is living their dream and wants the opportunity to play in Europe. But then the player that's already there and is just a global superstar. I'm curious of like the day-to-day life and work of like managing. I'm not saying that he has an ego, but some superstars do. Is that a factor? How do you like internally and just personally handle the not just the person, but the brand that is Vinicius Jr.?
Look, he's a huge company.
Yeah,
he is. And we've been, you know, I personally have been part of that journey since he was 13 years old. So oh, I've been through every step.
When he was Vinicius Jr. Jr.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, he was when he was only Vinicius, I guess.
His dad wasn't born yet? Yeah, like, you
know, so, I mean, like now he runs like a company.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has a lot of guys around him. You have different... You know, you have actually a team of people employed by him to service him, and that's all set up by us. It's you know, most of the heavy lifting we do are the, you know, contract negotiations. Obviously, you know, overseeing the market, what opportunities are out there commercially, and I think this is where Roc Nation was a huge uplift for him in the past years. I think he's probably the number one player,
yes,
or, you know, top three, yes, player in the World Cup, mm-hmm, in terms of
course
activation and probably, you know, commercial income.
Might so, I say he would look amazing in an Arsenal shirt? I'll just leave that
there. just leave the thought. You know,
he would just look so good in it.
You've got his agent right here.
Yeah, okay. That's why I said
you want to start negotiating?
I'll make a phone call. You think I won't right now? Mikel, he's right here.
But no, so I think, look, it's and to what Michael, you know, said about Jay, a lot of what we bring is also Jay as the benchmark, mm-hmm, for these, you know, for these players. When you're just like, he's a musician and, you know, look at what he became, and doing the same for, you know, Rihanna.
Yeah.
And then
our marching band is walking.
how do we bring this to sport? How do we bring this to soccer, to international football? And then, you know, could Vinny be the first one to become this big? I mean, this is really our objective.
How bad do you want to say football? How bad? I know he wants to say football.
I'm curious. We have to ask this. If you're on our show, especially when we're talking about Vinicius Jr., who I thought... deserved the Ballon d'Or.
I sort of.
A couple of years ago, is obviously the celebrations around it were a big story, right? About like bringing the family and prepping a party with the expectation that it was going to win a Ballon d'Or. I think. You know, I still think deserve it. I don't personally, we talked about it on the show. It wasn't a big deal. We didn't necessarily care, but it did lead to a lot of criticism that I thought was probably a little unfair, a little too harsh even. But what was your experience with that?
Well, look, I think, you know, that's all pretty normal.
Yeah.
Right. You know, Lamine Yamal did the same last year, and he said himself, you know, I thought I was going to win. He had everything set up. So, you know, everyone who's in the short list will set up something because you just want to be prepared. Now it was more Real Madrid being criticized because they boycotted the event. I think, to me, you know, talking about brand building, you know, France Football, the magazine did a good job. To me, the Ballon d'Or is, overvalued. When you think about it, it's just a prize from a magazine.
Right.
He got the prize that is most important, which is the prize given by FIFA, which is the global organization. And it's happened before with Brazilian players. A lot of people did not mention that. So when you think about the career of Ronaldo, he won 2 Ballon d'Ors, but he won 3 times the FIFA Player of the Year. Ronaldinho, the same. He won 1 Ballon d'Or, but twice he won the FIFA Player of the Year. So, you know, to us Brazilians, he was the best player in the world that year. You know, that's just a prize given by a magazine. Now, that said, obviously carries a lot of weight in European football because it is, you know, an European magazine, and it is historically the prize given to the best European, you know, footballer of the year. I felt they were more criticized for what, you know, for the decision than Vinny himself. He was, he didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
He thought he was going to win. That's why he won the FIFA award. As well, he prepared the party. If he won, there was going to be a party. He didn't win, there was no party. But then, you know, the prize was boycotted by Real Madrid. So look, it's life goes on, and
but they stood you know, behind. Hopefully, he wins
World Cup Player the you know
yeah.
tournament, which yeah. is you know now even bigger than anything.
So. Right, or he calls mom, make some fish water, bro. I gotta get over this. I wanna ask because obviously one of the things that we've done this show for 10 years now. In fact, there's a photo there of us in my original kitchen when we started this with like bootleg equipment. One of the things that I've always said, it surprises me. I've had meetings with heads of Premier League, and I'm like, how does the whole world watch you and one country watches the NFL and they 4X your revenue? How is that possible? There's no kids growing up in Thailand hoping to one day be Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Hoping to be, you know, Jackson Dart. But everybody wants to be Ronaldo. Everybody wants to be Vinny. Everybody wants to be, you know, maybe not Martinelli, but I think Vinny could replace him. But all of these players, like, your guys are like, the whole world is watching. How are you not making that money? From your perspective, being folks who were, you know, doing business in America and now going over into European sport, are you finding those gaps? Are you seeing that there's space where there is additional revenue, or is the sport just that dramatically different than the way we do business here?
I'll jump in real quick. I mean, I think first of all, it's catching up. I think international football in Europe, and when you think about the big leagues in Europe, they're beginning to catch up. I think since I've been there over the last 6 or 7 years, I've seen a bigger emphasis now on commercializing the entity and commercializing the sport. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that when I first got there.
Yeah.
And I think when you think about American sport, and that could be both collegiate and professional, although college could be considered professional now.
Yeah.
There's always been an emphasis on how do you commercialize it? Mm-hmm. How do you drive revenues? Athletes have been very interested in developing their own IP. We hadn't seen that in Europe for a very long time, and we didn't see that in the world of football, but that's beginning to change. They really are beginning to understand that in order to be successful, the growth of revenues, being able to drive revenues creatively, is critically important to the success of the game long term. And the modern day athlete, the modern day footballer, has now looked at some of the star power in the U.S., and they've said to themselves, you know what? I want that. I want those endorsements. I want those opportunities off the field. I want to grow my IP. We talked about Vinny, right? I remember the first time Fred introduced me to Vinny. You know, Vinny wanted to be a crossover celebrity. He wanted to be a global celebrity, not just a global football player, mm-hmm. but a global celebrity. And he wanted everything that went around that was involved in that, right? He wanted the endorsement opportunities. He wanted the exposure to American culture. He wanted the ability to interface with artists and athletes. And he's done that. And that's why today, when you think about Vinicius Jr., you think about a rock star. Not 100%. Just a football player, but a rock star.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a very apparent because how many rap songs can you listen to where they drop Vinicius' name? There's no greater compliment, right?
That 100%.
You are yeah. part of pop culture when you are in lyrics when it comes to, you know, just as our popularity. I'm curious about the relationship that Roc Nation has with Chelsea and just the projects that you got. I see another one in another Polish club, but just talking about working with clubs directly, what is the strategy and focus when it comes to that?
So when we started our international office, we thought that sports consulting would be an opportunity that we could capitalize on. And I think it goes back to your question when you talk about the commercialization of the sport. We brought a skill set to Europe that didn't really exist. Mm-hmm. How to build global brands, how to monetize those brands. So over the last 6 or 7 years, we've probably worked with 25 or 30 different sports organizations in Europe to do just that. Chelsea is one of the latest. They have, you know, a goal and objective to build their brand here in America, and we're helping them to do that. Cracovia, you know, a club in Poland, same thing. How do we go beyond the Poland borders? How do we attract commercial partners? How do we tell our story differently so that commercially we can become a little bit more viable? So those are the opportunities that we're working on. We've done it in Africa. We've done it throughout Europe. We're doing some consulting work here in America, and hopefully we'll do some in Brazil.
When you look at the sport, the fan bases will tell you it's a religion and that they're so deeply dedicated to these individual clubs. When you look at the business of the sport, you need to be able to grow a little bit beyond just that fan base, right? And I've said this to clubs before, especially in Germany, they have the 50+1 rule. So they're really locked down on some of the additional partnerships and commercialization you could do. And I said, yeah, but you're not bound by those rules in America, right? So you could do something different in America than you could do here. And your average fan that's coming to the stadium every week is not necessarily going to be I mean, I'm sure they'll be critical of it, but they're not exposed to that as often. So it gives you an opportunity to be someone different. I'm looking at Juventus. They've turned their badge into essentially a moniker for a clothing brand, really. It's the almost a double J, right? And they see themselves as a brand beyond the 90 minutes of what happens on the pitch and just a house of
lifestyle.
Four. Yes, lifestyle is an incredible name for it. But I also think it goes beyond that because I'd want to see a film produced by Juventus. Como, I think, is doing a tremendous job of that. You're getting involved.
By the way, we consult Como. That's another consulting partner of ours. We've been working with them. It's a great story, though. I mean, to me, it's one of the best stories in global football.
Champions League football next season.
That's right.
Fabregas.
That's right. When you think about what they've done on the field, but also what they've done off the field and how they've leveraged that lake, Como, to create a
lifestyle around it.
They are a lifestyle brand. And I remember sitting down with their leadership when they got promoted. They said, listen, Michael, we're not just a football club. We're a lifestyle brand. And we want to leverage it as such. And that's why we partnered with them. But more and more clubs, to your point, are looking at becoming lifestyle brand. Look what PSG has done.
Yeah, PSG's
great example.
Yeah.
Sure. Amazing.
But can you see a world where Chelsea is more than just the club that Frank Lampard played for and, Palmer plays for? Can you see them as a lifestyle brand? Because I know Como does, like, you can rent villas on Lake Como through the club Como.
That's right.
And you get a ticket to the game. What are they going to do?
Well, I think it's about telling their story and how do you connect with consumers.
Feel free to laugh, by the way. If you hold it in, it becomes a fart.
I think Chelsea, when they sat down with us and we talked about our partnership, it was about how do we connect with consumers in a different way, right? How do we sell our brand to a consumer who may not be a football fan? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're helping them with. But a long-winded answer to your question, I think yes. These are big global properties. And it's about telling their story. It's about connecting in different ways. It's about creating content. It's about partnering with the right organizations and brands to reach different consumers, to grow their fan base, to grow their appeal, and to, again, monetize their brand.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that you guys are here in New York, the Brazil-Morocco match had, I believe, six of your clients playing in the game.
Huge.
And then on the same day as the Knicks clinched the title, just being here around, I think, what is one of the, I think, one of the most unique sports moment. What has your experience been like getting to see?
By the way, before we get to
things?
That moment, because listen, I grew up right outside of New York.
Okay,
I'm dating myself in Livingston, New Jersey.
I'm from Newark.
Oh, really? Okay,
that's why I know so many Brazilians.
So, so by the way, being
everyone
back
from
in New York,
was afraid of my time.
and watching the Knicks win after 53 years, unbelievable experience. But I want to go back to what you said about the six players on Brazil You know, my partner here, Fred. You know, when you think about having six players on the Brazilian national team, that tells you you're dominating the Brazilian market.
I mean, yeah.
There's you're only dominating 11. The Brazilian
no,
market.
Start.
And by the way, you're doing things the right way. Fred, you got to talk about that. Because I got to tell you, I'm sitting here today and I'm still impressed.
Yeah, were you a scout in Brazil at all?
I'm still impressed.
Yeah. And we had a couple of players who, you know, missed the World Cup because of injury. But actually, the six players in that day were, you know, five clients in Brazil, one client in the Moroccan team. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So we had four clients starting that day, three for Brazil, one for Morocco, and then two on the bench for Brazil. You know, obviously Endrick, the young star, everyone was expecting to see him play, and now Ancelotti is hearing about it from
Brazil. Yeah. We talked about it.
He may be starting.
Hopefully next game.
A lot of pressure.
I saw him at Lyon. Went to Lyon.
Yeah, no, it was. It's been, you know, for me, obviously young, you know, growing up in Brazil, and my most, you know, the memories of watching the World Cup, 82, 86, 90. I mean, just for me to be living that moment on Saturday at MetLife Stadium that day. And, you know, when the game starts, it's really a dream come true. So it was an incredible day.
All right. Shout out to Fred Pennant, Michael Uhrmark, and Keyshawn said, ask him if Vinny's going to Chelsea.
No, we will not be doing that.
I don't think so. Vinny to Chelsea. Everybody, Vinny to Chelsea. Everybody doing everything they can. Okay. Keyshawn, it's just your comment.
Jesus. Keyshawn got money on this. Venezia Kids pretty much has a fashion line.
Okay, that's
that
right.
That is absolutely true. Shouts to Keyshawn for really crushing it in the chat.
Really lobbying Vinny there. And speaking of Venezia, shout out to Gianluca Busio, who was on the show last week. So go check out that episode if you have not yet. And if you want to watch the full interview with Fred Penn and Michael Yormark, you can watch that on the Cooligans YouTube channel. That is available now. So go check that out. Shout out to Rock Nation for coming through studio. I mean, I'm saying
they only deal with major clubs, Como, Cooligans, okay. Chelsea.
I see the comments sometimes. People are like, yo, how'd y'all get this person on the show? I don't know, but stop asking the question.
Yeah, why just... you wearing a wire, dude? Okay, who are you?
Too many questions.
Go
check out the full interview on YouTube. And we got more Cooligans Daily Live after this, so come right back. All right, welcome back to the Cooligans Daily Live. Again, shout out to the Rock Nation folks for joining us.
So cool.
And let's move on now to preview a couple of matches, some happening today, some tomorrow. But let's start today with Switzerland against Algeria. They're playing later tonight. This game is at what? This is a late game.
This is a late game. It's today at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. West Pacific. Coast time. So it's a late
what's that,
one.
11 p.m.?
11 p.m. So I don't know. The kids are going to stay up on a school night. We shall see. Oh, no. It's a summer. Nobody's in school.
Yeah, nobody's
unless
in
you're
school.
In summer school.
And then bad kid. Bad kid. Bad you kid. Don't get to watch a World Cup.
So, but we're looking at Switzerland's projected lineup. And Switzerland have looked fairly sharp this tournament. They have not. They haven't gone through a game, scoreless or whatever. They've given up a fair amount of goals.
They haven't kept a clean sheet.
Yeah. But they're playing pretty well, and we see number 17. That's always my focus. Ruben Vargas, El Dominicano. We got a Dominicans.
Swiss for De Lo Mio.
We got to figure that out. But he's been having a great tournament. He hasn't really started many matches, so I'd be surprised if he does start here. But overall, this has been a decent side, a decent Swiss side that, you know, they beat Canada at home there, and which is why they're playing in Vancouver when it's probably should have been Canada. I'm thinking back to Algeria's last game against Austria and then that back and forth. I feel like these teams are kind of even, and Switzerland reminds me a little bit of Austria as well. But I'm slightly favoring Switzerland here. I think because Algeria feel like a little too chaotic.
I'm not slightly favoring Switzerland. I'm fully favoring Switzerland in this one. I think Algeria, look, they suffered a 3-0 loss in the first match. That was a bit of a rough one.
It is a messy.
Yeah, it's a rough one. And then they 3-3 draw to Jordan. You should beat Jordan if you're going to compete at this level. And, obviously Riyad Mahrez, probably his last World Cup. Ait Nouri, very good. But when it comes to playing against Switzerland, I just think Switzerland is just slightly a class above what this Algeria team can bring. Mm-hmm. And having Kobel, I know you haven't had a clean sheet, and I think that's more down to the back line. But Kobel was the clean sheet leader when he was at Dortmund for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, in Bundesliga. I mean, he's just a very stout goalkeeper. And I think against Algeria, I think he's going to prove to be the deciding force for me. So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking it's probably going to be like maybe 2-3-1.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. The Algeria games, at the very least, have been like really fun.
And super back and forth. They're basketball games.
Yeah. So, I mean, if the game is chaotic, which Switzerland haven't really had a chaotic game just yet, that would make it that's where you could think Algeria will have a chance. Right. Okay. Let's move on to Australia against Egypt.
This is look, I'm surprised Australia is still here.
Really?
To be completely honest, yeah, because I just assumed Turkey A would probably finish third in that group.
Right.
So the fact that Australia are here, I think, is very good. And I think Dunny said something really important, which is he looks at the way Australia plays with a lot of grit, a lot of heart, try to catch you making mistakes, try to get you to upend your own game plan. And that's the way the U.S. used to play. And I think this is a moment where the quality that Egypt has on the pitch is going to shine beyond what we're looking here. And of course, dude, you know, Traore if he starts. You got Iracunda. I mean, these are some great Metcalf. I'm assuming he's not going to pull the same. Popovich is going to make the same mistakes he made against the U.S. He's going to start his best players. But, I mean, look at this. You know what I mean? You got Mohamed Salah. You got Trezeguet. Dude, this is just a slightly higher class of talent, and I think that's going to overwhelm, especially when you get to the knockout rounds. You can't just gut and grit your way through.
Sure, we'll see. I mean, Australia's going to play pretty defensive. Mm-hmm. Like, can Egypt figure that out? I mean, they have a few good players, but not all of them. I think
not everyone is Mohamed Salah.
Yeah, yeah.
Level.
So it's going to take some individual brilliance because Australia are going to be annoying.
Yeah,
that's I think that's how Egypt is going to kind of interpret that game, but.
Egypt players can be like, stop.
Yeah. But Egypt should win. I mean, they have to be like slight favorites, mainly because the slog of playing in CAF and AFCON and the experience that these Egyptian players have might be enough to get them like over that hump of like whatever challenges Australia are going to bring.
Yeah.
I don't see Australia scoring in this game. That's kind of the main thing.
I could see them scoring on
like
a counter
almost
or something,
like both. Counter-attacking teams. Yeah. I don't imagine the game being super, super open.
I hope it's back and forth. Let's talk a little bit about Argentina saying goodbye to Cabo Verde.
You think so?
I think this is a wrap for Cabo Verde.
I don't know. I don't think Messi's going to be able to figure out Vizinha.
Okay. those are famous last words. This is just, I mean, we're looking at a team that we're all expecting to go very far. Lionel Messi and Lautaro Martinez, interesting. Interesting to see them two starting next to each other. A little bit throwback because I think we were all hoping it would be Julian Alvarez
at some point. Alvarez has not been clinical enough,
no.
I think.
I hope he plays better in an Arsenal shirt than he does in an Argentina shirt. Just hoping and wishing for the
best.
No,
but this is a I'll be honest. I did not think Argentina would be kind of this good.
I thought they'd be this good. I didn't think they'd be this insane good, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I didn't expect Messi. You expected Messi to be good, but you thought that the goals would be kind of divided amongst the rest of the team.
Or age would have caught up to him at any point.
But, you know, the third game in the group stage against Jordan, you know, they put a Messi didn't start. Messi didn't start and he still scores. There's, you know, I don't know what really to take from that game as far as how are the other players kind of developing or you know, focusing on and contributing. But you would imagine, again, against a team like Cabo Verde, it's Argentina and Messi's there. And I mean, he should be cooking any goalkeeper that he's facing.
Instead of results, we should be talking about what is the over-under on possession that Cabo Verde will have. I'm saying 18. Yeah. 18.5%.
Unless we have...
What's the over-under? If you're watching, put in the comments, the over-under is 18.5%. Are you over or under? I might be under.
Unless we have another, you know, shocker. I don't know. I mean, Cabo Verde, they did it against Spain. Anything could happen, no. I guess, but I mean, Argentina,
it's a wrap.
They got to be loving who, you know, as far as their path to the final.
Hey, man, if I'm wrong, I will go to Cape Verde, bro. But I have a feeling this is the end of your run. But it's been a great run so far, except for that one guy.
All right.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Oh, we got comments.
Yeah, we got a couple comments before we get out of here. We gotta get to an airport. So hurry up, comments. Yeah. Can we trade back Chump's FIFA Peace Prize for Balogun to play against Belgium?
I'll take that deal.
Let's do that right now. What an amazing suggestion!
Any MLS news?
Yes, it's still happening.
All right. I hope you know you wouldn't know that by watching Fox. You would think there would be some advertisements for the MLS. Reckless play. It was deserved. Wrong. Was not reckless.
Bro. But Swiss take the win.
Okay.
I think they will.
Yeah, I think they will.
All
right. Let's wrap up there. Everybody, Maza is good. Is good as well. I don't know what that means.
Well, where I'm from, having a Maza means something different. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. Marmoush.
Marmoush.
I didn't know that was his nickname. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode of Cooligans Daily Live. Next up, we're going back home. Then we're going to be in Philly. And we're everywhere.
And then Boston, Miami, Atlanta, Dallas, your mother's house. It never ends.
Breakaway Tour has been crazy. All right. We will. So make sure if you haven't already, hit like, hit subscribe, hit hype on YouTube if you have not yet. Shout out to everybody
watching. Hit the bell, baby.
Shout out to everybody watching Yahoo Sports.
We got
to
go. Love you. Bye.
Adios. Adios. Bye. Bye. Bye.